talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, ghetto. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed will never come to feel what you need. When what you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah. Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
like
at.
Living like you're living.
Caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams,
yeah. Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
y'all.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed will never come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you.
Tell me, people,
you gotta take a look at yourself.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everything is well with you today. I hope you are having a good day and going to have a good day. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta. I hope it's a nice day wherever you are. I'll make it so. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, have to do, need to do, and must do, and hope the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it isn't, you do it anyway because it has to be done. So getting ready for a good weekend. I'm excited about the Black Power Awards. The Black Power Awards, of course, are tomorrow. In fact, going on now is the workshops that are happening, and it's all taking place at the Sheraton Hotel in here downtown Atlanta. Where's that at? Yes, 165 Cortland Street, Northeast in Atlanta. If you still want to know more about it, still might have a chance to come here to Atlanta to check out the Black Power Awards. You go to blackpowerawards.com, blackpowerawards.com, or call 404-439-1044. Like I said, they have some activities going on today, a meet and greet this evening. Tomorrow they're doing a few things, and of course tomorrow evening will be the Black Power Awards. And then on Sunday, they, in one of the areas off of Abernathy Street here, they have yoga, karate, and aerobics. So all kinds of good activities. My good friend, Brother DJ, at the Black Power Awards. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All the times that I'm going to give are Eastern times. So you can figure that out wherever you are. Because here it's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you can't, you can go to the archives. And me and Brother Jeff are setting those. We'll be setting those up with Brother Scotty from blacktalkradionetwork.com. Brother Scotty Reed, good brother. And, of course, on Wednesdays is Revive with Sister POC. Proof of Consciousness from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Revive. On Thursdays, last night, and I was with Baba Akima last night on Us Lifting Us and some of the exciting things that we're discussing in terms of the kind of things that are going to be going on with Us Lifting Us, and definitely excited about the Cafe Ulu. Will be a reality very soon. We're going through all the procedures to make it happen, you know, without any problems, without any issues, any, you know, all the things have been brought up to code and everything like that. So it's exciting, and I know that we'll be getting that together very, very soon. Hopefully before the year's out. I know that's the plan. you know, so let's make that happen. So, but last night there on every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., Us Lifting Us with Baba Kambizi, Baba Hakima, Sister Shay, Sister Nanana, all of them, Brother Thurman, all of us with Us Lifting Us. And, of course, Brother DJ. And, of course, Brother DJ is busy putting together the Black Power Awards. On today, this evening, from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., this evening, it's time for an awakening. Time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. I'm quite sure they'll have an interesting program, as they often do, with outstanding guests. Got to get some of them guests on my show, that's for sure. And then on Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore on Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then Saturday later afternoon is Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's once again Revive with Sister POC. Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So those are the things that are happening here for Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. This program we have every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. The discussion is African independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That discussion could take us a multiple number of places, but wherever it takes us, that is the key. That is the discussion. It could be sports, it could be politics, it could be whatever, but we're doing it from an African-centered perspective. The program, has stated in the intro, is unapologetically African. We strive for self-determination and liberation. We strive for sovereignty. What is sovereignty? And that's just, you know, I had an antagonist. I don't know why the brother was doing it. He said his name was Pianchi. And, of course, Pianchi was one of the last, the 25th dynasty of ancient Kemet. Nubians, dark-skinned brothers. Once again, reclaiming Kemet as an African, great African civilization. And that has been proven. That's nothing that, there's nothing funny about that. There's nothing that the Caucasian, it's proven. And Dr. Jopp proved that in 74 in Cairo, at the symposium in Cairo, where he said, I can prove to you that the ancient Kemetic people or the ancient Egyptians were African, dark-skinned people. And I think, he said, I have 10 ways to prove it. I think the smoking gun, though, was the melanin dosage test. Extracting some of the mummies of different eras, different dynastic periods, extracting the mummies and proving that the ancient Kemetic people were African people. Because of the amount of melanin in their skin. I know Caucasians want to claim it. I know they want to believe that this great civilization that gave the world, as I do in my intro, the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks, yes, they called it Egypt. And once the Greeks came in, the dynastic periods were over. Then the rule of the Ptolemies. Yes, Cleopatra the VII came out of the Ptolemies. She was the most noted. Was she Caucasian? Probably not. Was she African? Somewhat. She was like any high yellow sister because they mixed. What happened with the Ptolemies is that they mixed with the indigenous population of ancient Kemet to rule. So she would just be like a high yellow sister. She ain't Caucasian. Because, of course, once they mix, you know, we were genetically we're dominant. They're recessive. That just happens. I mean, you see, you know, I don't know if you notice a lot, but I've, of course, I think it's incumbent upon me to notice a lot, to be observant, to scrutinize stuff, how much intercultural, I don't say interracial because there's no such thing as race. And that's what we're going to talk about today. There's no such thing as race. But intercultural things you see on TV, particularly commercials. I just seen two commercials I hadn't seen previously. And in those two commercials, there's a high yellow sister with her. Looked like she got a jerry curl with two bright-skinned kids and a Caucasian man. And that's pretty much what you see a lot, you know. You do see a brother. In fact, there's one commercial. It's a dark-skinned brother with a Caucasian. And then it's supposedly the real family, I guess, because she said she's been with she was in the service, I guess. I don't know. He was in the service with the USSA insurance, if you've seen that commercial. So you see it a lot, which, of course, is, once again, the illusion of inclusion. Because in the reality, number one, Caucasians don't want to, quote, mix. Because I think what Frances Cress Welsing said, what she said in terms of the crest color theory confrontation, along with Dr. Neely Fuller, not Dr. Neely, he wasn't a doctor, he's a good brother though, but Neely Fuller, that Frances Cress, her thing was that she felt that when Europeans came out of that dark age, that medieval age, and went around the world taking everybody's stuff and raping women, seeing that the offspring did not look like them, causing in them to have an innate fear of genetic annihilation. And because of that fear, have to control everything. They have to run the world. They have to be dominant in the world. You see, because of that fear of genetic annihilation. But we strive for independence. We strive for self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. We don't strive to integrate. We shouldn't strive to vote and be in the House of Representatives and to be the president of the United Snakes. But we have, haven't we? And it's been to our detriment, and it will be until we get on the right path. What is sovereignty? The successful outcome, this is Brother Mwalimu Baruti, Baba Baruti's definition, sovereignty. The successful outcome of any nationalist movement is sovereignty for the people. Being sovereign means having absolute control over the life of the nation. Right now, as always, for African people, sovereignty is measured by how intelligently, independently, and powerfully we control our resources, our story, our narratives, our culture, time, space, and destiny. It is to have the power within the nation to control our lives and to control them in our best interest, regardless of opposition from outside. Accordingly, being sovereign has to mean that there is no one beyond us who makes any decisions about how we rule ourselves, how we live, what we believe, how we deal with enemies, whether they're aliens outside of us or traitors, those who are inside of us, and how we visualize our future and communicate and express that vision. It means that we are completely and consciously self-defining, self-determining, self-empowered, and self-respecting. And since no nation has ever risen to power and stayed there without holding their own tradition sacred, sovereignty necessarily means that we know, respect, protect, and extend in time through every coming generation who we are as a direct reflection of our ancestors. Sovereignty is our ultimate goal. If you want to join this conversation, please do. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And help me out in the conversation. Lend some support to the conversation. Tell me what you think about what we're going to discuss today, because we're going to discuss a tough, you know, it is very tough to discuss race in this country because, number one, let me tell you why. Because Caucasians don't want to hear. That's why it's tough. They don't want to hear the truth. They want to, and if it's going to be discussed, they want it to be palatable. They want it to be not as hard, not as, you know, ugly as it is. Number one, there's no such thing as race. They invented this concept. Johann Blumenbach, Carol Linnaeus, they invented the concept of race. There is no such thing as race. There's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. What makes us different as human beings is our ability to adapt to environments. Whatever the environment is, if we don't adapt, we die, become extinct if the environment changes. So we adapt. That's why you see the different hues, the different features, and so forth, because of Africans migrating out of Africa. And in those migrations of tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, you see that happen. So, yeah. That's a damn shame. I hate this system. I hate what they have done. I hate what Carol Linnaeus and Johann Blumenbach has done. I hate it. But the reality is we have to deal with it. We can't change it. But the change for us is how we respond to it. They created the concept, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. And because of what they have done around the world, to be dark is to be hated. Just this morning I was watching a piece on Facebook. I don't know. I saw another piece just like it. It was a replay of The Imitation of Life. You know, there's two Imitation of Life movies. One with Lana Turner and one with Claudette Colbert. Claudette Colbert is the old one. Looks like it's in the 30s, you know. So, you know. So whatever, you know, I'll tell you. This was just like The Imitation of Life. Young lady, and she, there's no way that, you know, she high yellow, but she ain't real high yellow. There's no way that this young lady could be mistaken for Caucasian. That's number one. That's for real. You know, but she hates her mother. She hates her dark skinned mother, hates the fact that her mother scrubbed floors to help her to raise her. She hates it. I'm going to tell you, you know, and that's the thing that is really bothersome, because you think in this day and age, but it's even deeper, brothers and sisters. I don't know how long ago that Judge Maybelline piece that I saw today, how long ago that was, how long it happened, you know, but it doesn't matter, because it could happen yesterday or even tomorrow, or it could have happened a decade or two ago. The point is the mindset that has been impacted on us, the mindset that we deal with that makes us hate ourselves, that makes us hate our hair. I really wish a serious natural thing would come about and we can drop all of this weave, all of these extensions, all of this other stuff, and just wear our hair. White supremacy, European Caucasian supremacy, racism and privilege has done a serious job on our psyche. Of course, we had
Brother Ezra Erehon. Brother Ezra Erehon wrote the book, The Sovereign Psyche. He deals basically with you as an individual gaining the knowledge and gaining the information to develop your mindset to believe who you are as an African is a good thing as an individual. And I'm down with that because it has to start first within yourself. I understand that, but he doesn't translate it out into, sovereignty, as I just read from Baba Baruti and talking about it, has a practice, has a collective practice for our people, you know? So yeah, watching that piece, it just hurts. So then I saw this piece. I'm going to read a little bit from it. This is a piece. From Yahoo News. Yahoo News. And the title of it, Hate in America, Where It Comes From and Why It's Back. Well, right away, the title is whack because hate in America, bottom line, is just it. Not where it comes. Well, you can put from where it comes from. Hate in America, its origins and why it still continues. That would be a better title as opposed to why it's back, because it's never left. You see, when Caucasians were being developed, that's why somebody told me that they looked for that book, the Caucasian, Michael Bradley from the Canadian Caucasian book, Michael Bradley's book, The Iceman's Inheritance, the Caucasian's sexist, selfish and greedy nature, racist and greedy nature. I'm trying to paraphrase that subtitle, but I'm not off by much, but that's pretty much it. But what he stated was that in the environment, it's the same thing Jop talked about in the two cradle theory of human development. In the environment that Caucasians had to deal with, as opposed to the environment that we had to deal with, he developed some very selfish and greedy habits that are still with us today that you can plainly and clearly see. And so you can see the sexism. And so I saw another piece that just really blew my mind this morning, and too, is that there in some cultures, particularly in Asian cultures, and I think they said Russia, that they would see a young lady on the street and kidnap her. Kidnap the young lady and force the young lady to marry. I'm like, you know, that's why I'm so adamant about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people so we can go to our way. Because even on the continent, all of the, see, this sexist and greedy nature that the Europeans developed is a rape culture. It's male, hierarchy, male domineering. We didn't have that in Africa. That is not us. We understood that there's a symbiotic relationship between men and women. We didn't have that. And see, what happened with the Caucasian woman, she had to acquiesce or capitulate because why? The environment was so bad. So he would dog her out, and she couldn't say, well, hey, man, I'm tired of taking your abuse. I'm going to, oh, wait a minute, it's dark out there. There's animals out there. I don't know what's out there. It's cold. It's cold out there. But in the motherland, if she said, in the motherland, if she said, you know, I'm not liking the way you treat me and my kids, she could walk to another area. There's fruit there. There's water there. There are probably some other more congenial people, whatever. You didn't have that. And so, but the main male hardcore patriarchal mindset is pretty much global. It's global. And it's, yes, it's on the continent. The rape culture. It's on the continent. Because of colonization and the imposition of Europeans. Well, Brother Osh, you mean to tell me they wasn't raping nobody before Europe colonized Africa or before the Arabs came and enslaved Africans? No. That is not a historical. No. No. And if somebody can prove me wrong, please do. Rescue me if I'm wrong. So, this article talking about, and it begins the article, this is what's whack, with George W. Bush, that mass murderer, the one who allowed 9/11, the one who orchestrated 9/11 has the inside job that it is. Anyway, to better understand the current spike in bigotry and hate in the United States, Yahoo News interviewed historians, sociologists, and psychologists and experts who study hate groups. And we spoke to four individuals caught up in the white nationalist movement, including former Klansmen and a young ex social justice warrior whose stories are told here. I ain't gonna read all of that. You know. On October 19th, former President George W. Bush traveled to New York City to deliver a speech at an event dedicated to the spirit of liberty at home and in the world. His messages were sobering. Most of the media focused on Bush's implicit rebukes of the man who currently occupies his old office, Donald J. Trump. His burly veiled critiques of conspiracy theories and outright fabrications of bullying and prejudice in our public office life, or of a discourse degraded by casual cruelty. But less attention was paid to what might have been the most significant part of his speech. George W. Bush, the previous Republican president, was appearing on the public stage for one of the few times since leaving the White House nearly 9 years ago to announce that hate of all things was back. Oh, really? It never left. It's never been away. Hatred of others, racism, xenophobia, fear of others, sexism, all of those things are as American as apple pie. Caucasian men came and took this country for their prosperity. They didn't take this country for some kind of multicultural experiment of getting along. They took this to enrich themselves. And then they took us to make that happen, damn it. We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism, Bush lamented. Bigotry seems emboldened. The signs are insistent. The odious memes, the Hail Trump salutes, the racist graffiti, a rally to save Confederate statues, and the Unite the Right that descended into violence, including the death of the young lady counter-protester. Recently, I was kind of introduced to the concept of activism and rallies, said Gunther Rice, a 22-year-old New Jersey native who attended that deadly event in Charlotte, but was not implicit in the attack on the woman. I'm like, wait, there's a bunch of white nationalists that go out in public and speak and do all this cool stuff and cool events? Hell yeah, I'm in. The statistics tell a similar story. The most recent release by the FBI just this week, the agency's annual measure of the number of hate crimes reported in the U.S. The previous year, the FBI defined a hate crime as a traditional offense like murder, arson, or vandalism with an added element of bias because you did it. because you hated the people, you did that. That's the hate crime. You just didn't do it because you hate them. You have problems with them, the way they look, the color of their skin, the fact that they're women, whatever. That's why you did it. In 2016, there were 6,100 reported incidents of people targeted based on their race, religion, sexuality, disability, or national origin, an increase of 300 over 2015. And like last year, the overwhelming majority of these victims were targeted because of their race or religion. I hate to use the word race. We say culture. Because of their culture and religion. Of the 4,496 targeted because of their culture, 52% were American African. Of the 1,500 targeted because of their religion, 55% were of the European Jewish faith, and 25% were Muslims. This is the second year in a row that the hate crime numbers have increased, reversing the trend of the preceding 20 years. "I'm not surprised," said Dr. Jeff DeVet, associate dean and director of the Institute on Culture and Justice in Northeastern University, who has worked with the FBI to train agents to identify hate crimes. "The numbers are consistent with those reported in recent months by groups like the Anti-Defamation League and, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center," Morris Dees. He says, "as well as by cities and other municipalities. In fact, their numbers for 2017 are looking worse. In America's six largest cities, more than 525 hate crimes have been committed so far this year, up 22% from the same period in 2016. The reason I'm surprised is that it's just another indication of a coercing of relationships in America in the past year or two, particularly aimed at people of color and certain religious groups." Still, hearing a former leader of the free world concede that hate is having a moment, that is a turning point and a mission that's impossible to ignore. Why is it happening, and why now? Haven't we put hate, the bigotry that Bush denounced, has a blasphemy against the American creed behind us? No, because that's not the American creed. The American creed is greed. In fact, there used to be a saying about America. No kidding. What's good for America is good for the world. Not what's good for the world is good for America. What's good for America, because we're the lead. We dictate. We dominate. We say what it is and what it isn't. Yeah. The answer, sadly, is no. Hatred of outsiders has been a secular thing in America, and we seem to be in such a cycle now, because it's always been, because the Caucasians who came here and took this, let me put this thing aside, get done with this article, because let me just go on this history of hate in America. We got a little thing on the history of hate in America. A history of hate in America. Cultural and ethnic bigotry runs in cycles in America, and evidence suggests that we are in an upswing now. Attitudes towards outsiders fluctuate, but they have been spiked at outright hate. In 1865, of course, this is after the Civil War, Reconstruction, the Ku Klux Klan was formed in response to political and economic gains by newly freed captives. 1882, Chinese Exclusion Act. Chinese laborers originally brought, they didn't come, they were brought to the U.S. to work in the coal mines and were blamed for depressing wages. The law virtually banned Chinese immigration. In 1924, immigration restrictions in response to massive immigration from Southern and Eastern Europe at the beginning of the century, the Johnson-Reed Act severely restricted the admission of immigrants from most countries in the world except Western Europe. They didn't want the folks in the East. Too ethnic, they thought. Because, you know, even when they, you know, the Irish at one time were not considered Caucasian. The Italians at one time were not considered Caucasians. The 1930s, the Great Depression and unemployment soared, and more than half a million Mexicans, or American Mexicans, including their children who were born in the United States, were sent back south of the border as they took the Mexicans' land, Texas, Arizona, California. In 1942, Japanese internment. With the outbreak of the Second World War, Japan, the war with Japan and the Europeans, or Germany rather, more than 100,000 Japanese Americans, most of them American citizens, were taken out of their homes and sent to internment camps. 1954 to 1968, the civil rights era, has American Africans marched and demonstrated for voting rights and desegregation from Caucasians in the South and elsewhere. Caucasians fought back with violence. In 2017, Caucasian nationalism, following the election of Donald Trump, who campaigned on building a wall on the southern border and a number of hate crimes and hate groups, is on the rise. You know, the reality is this. This thing was built on the idea and taken, even Canada, and other parts of this hemisphere by Europeans. I keep mentioning Brazil because I mentioned Brazil because of the amount of Africans that are in Brazil. Over 50% of the country's population of Brazil, that hundreds of millions, are African. But it doesn't stop there. I've seen a piece, and you know, we talk about Cuba, and there's a lot of people talk about Cuba very well, and to me, you should. But what I saw interesting the other day about Cuba, on I don't know if you've probably seen it on Facebook, there's a female band in Cuba, from Cuba. They're all dressed in white. They play all the instruments, all the singing, and so forth. And I said to myself, because there's a lot of us in Cuba. I recently returned from Cuba, went on a cruise, and part of the cruise was going to Cuba for a day. But I've been to Cuba previously, and I've stayed some days, so I had a chance to see Cuba. I've been to other parts of Cuba. And what I noticed, and what I truly noticed, even in this short stint, that the idea of looking most close to Caucasians is what is favored. When we went to the, where you can buy the cigars and the rum, where you can buy the cigars in the state store as opposed to on the streets, the five employees in the state store were all Caucasian-looking Cubans. Everybody within that area outside who were selling cigars, trying to hawk cigars, were Cuban Africans. And that is like that everywhere. Everywhere. Just like Dr. Bobby Wright says, wherever they are and we are, they're in a position of dominance and control, and we are in a subservient position. It defies all laws of probability. And the problem is because we don't understand. We really don't. We think we do. And that's why I put the statement of what it is that they have done to us, not just on racism or race or something like that, or white supremacy. No, this is what it is, brothers. This is what it is. It is European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. They are not white. They're Europeans or Caucasians, as they like to call themselves, because what did they do? They chose that Caucasus mountain range that is in the eastern part of Asia. They chose that mountain range to be a dividing point between Europe and the other part, or the eastern part of Asia. Because all Europe is Western Asia. It's Western Asia. But they utilized that, and because it became so strong, they said this is a continent, the European continent. This is how arrogant. And to me, you know, somebody said, wait a minute. You can't call yourself a continent, because even by your definitions, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. But that's just how arrogant they are. The European continent. So it's European Caucasian supremacy. They believe that they are superior. They believe, just like the arrogance of Richard Spencer, and I'm quite sure you've seen him. If you haven't, you can look him up. Because he was the one that, when Trump came to victory, hail Trump. Hail victory. He was the one that was out front in that situation in Charlottesville, along with David Duke and other European supremacists. European supremacy. Racism. Once again, they created the idea of race. So there is no such thing as race. But racism has a human construct, but as a social construct, is real, because they made it happen. And they continue to make it happen. They are the ones that perpetuate it. That's why I put that in there. European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. They believe in manifest destiny. They believe that they've been ordained by their God to be supreme and to rule over all others. That's what we're dealing with. And let me say this to you. We cannot change that. We cannot change it. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they are superior. And nothing you can do to prove, because there's been plenty of proof consistently. But yet they dismiss it. They ignore it. And they continue on with their program of subjugating the world for their benefit at all humanity's expense. So we must understand, we must develop some functional definitions. I'm going to give you those definitions after we come back from the break. Some functional definitions of what racism is and what it is and what it isn't. Because a lot of us believe that we know what it is, but really we don't. And nor do we understand the impact that it has on our very lives. How it has distorted our minds. That's why we end every program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the oppressor, the white man, is the minds of the oppressed. They have done a job on our minds. And what makes it really difficult for us, particularly here in the West, particularly here in America, is you're trained to think individually. See, individualism is a European Caucasian desire. I think, therefore I am. But collectivism is an African need, an imperative. I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. I mean, the young kids, when the European, he's in Africa, he says, I'll give you this big basket of goodies for the first one that runs from this place to that tree. From this place to that tree. I'll give the first one that touches the winner. They all went together. And the Caucasian, no. No, only one. This is Ubuntu. Ubuntu. We are collective. We are together. You've probably seen where they have the feet of all these people in a circle, young brothers in a circle. Ubuntu, we're together. That's how we roll. Together. That's what we must understand. That's why we push us lifting us, the economic development cooperative, in the spirit of Ujamaa. From the key Swahili words means collective, cooperative economics. We like to say it's family economics. If we understand and respect family. I know that in this world, a lot of people don't respect family. There are some people whose family life has been so messed up, and I understand that. I never forget when I was doing a workshop with these kids, these young men, and talking about how important it was to respect women and their mothers. But yet some of them, because this was at the height of the crack, this was in the 90s, the crack epidemic was happening, early 90s, late 80s. And there's some of their mothers was on crack and abandoned them or didn't take care of them or put them in chaotic in really crazy situations. So I understand that. But we must respect each other. But it's difficult because we live in a society that doesn't value. It's what's in it for me. Doesn't value relationships. Doesn't value women. Once again, it's the rape culture that has been part and parcel of the upbringing of Europeans. Period. Period. They've never respected women. But we have. There were women that would rule in ancient Kemet, Queen Hatshepsut for 21 years, and others. Women owned property, could divorce. Powerful women. In fact, you rose to the kingship or to the rulership through the woman's line. We understood the positive relationship between men and women. But in this situation that we're in, it develops such deep self-hatred for one another. That's why I was so sickened by that piece I saw on Facebook with Maybelline Ephraim. She was tripping too. She was going off on this young lady because she wanted to be Caucasian. She hated her mother. And she was suing her mother because her mother came to or she was dancing. She said burlesque. It's a dance. She dancing. Just like in the movie. Just like in the movie, Imitation of Life. Like I said, there's two versions. You can go online, maybe go to YouTube. You might even better watch them there or go to the library. We're going to take a break. Let me come back from the break. We'll continue this conversation. You can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You know, we're going to be right back, so you stay right here with us, okay? All right.
Spread some love a little
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And on Wednesday, Sister Revive would revive. Sister PLC would revive every Wednesday, 8 p.m. to 10. And then on Thursdays, Baba Akima, Baba Kimbizi, and Brother DJ, and Sister Nanana, and Sister Shay, us, lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, every Thursday from 9 p.m. Eastern. And then on Fridays, today, this evening, Time for an Awakening with our hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. Eastern till 11. Tomorrow, Troy Wilmore, Sports Talk, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then later in the afternoon is Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is Revive with Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. These are the things that are happening. And there are going to be other things going to be happening on this network. I'm very excited about being associated with Time for an Awakening and Black Talk Radio Network. Very excited about that. And I hope that the program will continue to grow. The networks will continue to grow. And we'll have all kinds of good programming, mind-raising, conscious-raising, because that's what we need. Like I said, we don't hear what I'm saying. We don't hear enough. And even though you may say, damn, he's saying the same thing again. Yeah. Over and over again. It's not being redundant. It's not being repetitive. It's positive reinforcement. We have to hear it to understand it. But more importantly than understanding it, it causes, it's supposed to cause an action in you to change your attitude, change your mind, change your behavior, change how you look at yourself and look at us and look at each other, to begin to love yourself and love us, trust one another, work with one another, build with one another. But I know why we don't. Because of European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. It has affected the whole world. Functional definitions of racism. When I put this piece together, based upon what others had said about racism, Dr. Bobby Wright, my good friend, Brother Anderson Thompson, Andy Thompson. He's in Chicago and in a nursing home now. Said he suffers from dementia. I talked to Brother Conrad, Dr. Conrad Worrell. They're contemporaries, good friends. They've, in fact, worked in the same building together many years. Brother Anderson Thompson's definition. Dr. Milana Karinga, that definition. Dr. Francis Kress Welsing and Dr. Amos Wilson. First, Webster, the unabridged dictionary. Racism, a belief that human races have distinctive characteristics that determine their prospective cultures. Usually, see, cultures, it's not race. There's no such thing as race to define humanity. There's no categorizations of race or stratifications of race. There's one humanity, the human race, if you want to use that term. Europeans devised this concept of race, giving themselves the top position and with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. A belief that human race have distinctive characteristics that determine their prospective cultures, usually involving the idea that one's own race is superior and has the right to rule others. And that's a good definition based on what Caucasians believed. That they were superior and they have the right, the manifest destiny, to rule over others, to take people's stuff, not to bargain, not to barter, not to buy, not to none of that, just to take it. It is our right to take it. And you, if you don't succumb, you will die. We will kill you. A functional Bobby Wright, Dr. Bobby Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright, clinical psychologist, his essay, Psychopathic Racial Personality, is a must read for anybody. You can maybe go online. Once again, as I constantly say, because unfortunately a lot of our people don't want to read, which is unfortunate. But if you don't, you can go online. If you have access to, just go to the library, use the computer if you don't want to take out a book, and go to YouTube. Google Bobby Wright, B-O-B-B-Y, Dr. Bobby Wright. The functional definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of a people because of their race. Using this definition, it's very clear that at this point in time, blacks cannot be racist because of their lack of power to oppress anybody, Chinese, Caucasians, Indians, etc. We can't be racist because we can't impose anything on anybody. We can't stop Caucasians from doing whatever the hell they want to do, going wherever they want to go, taking whatever they want to take. We can, if we use our minds and step outside the imposed boundaries that they put us in, or release the vice grip that they have on it, yeah, then we could, because we wouldn't deal with them. We would deal with them righteously. We would check them, especially as the concerns and call for us. We have no ability to stop Caucasians from doing whatever they want to do. Now, there's a big issue. One of the things they're talking about at the Black Power Conference is gentrification. I never forget when I first heard that word gentrification. Oh, God, maybe, I don't know. Sunday mornings with Charles Carroll. That's how long ago that was. Charles Carroll been dead. But Sunday mornings is still on CBS. I think Jane Pauley is the host now. And, you know, Sunday morning deals. They give you a synopsis of news, and then they do a lot of features. One of the features was on gentrification, because I had never heard the word. And the focus was a city at that time of Cincinnati. But not long after did I see gentrification happening in Milwaukee and in Washington, D.C., because my best friend who passed 10 years ago last year was going to Howard Law School. He was going to Howard Law, and he lived on Q Street. And we were talking in the brownstone that he lived in and talking about the Caucasians who were buying them up where they had once been us. Because, you know, D.C. was used to be called what? Chocolate City. Now they call it Vanilla Swirl. Somebody said, yeah, now they call it Vanilla Swirl. You know, because of displacement. And when the property goes down, they can get the places for a lot less money, build the property up, just like in Brewers Hill in Milwaukee, the Brewers Hill district in Milwaukee. The top property taxes are raised. The people who formerly lived there, who are still trying to hold on, can't afford to live there anymore, and they wind up selling their properties to some other developers, some other Caucasians. That's what's happening. Gentrification. So we have no ability to decide in their world the things that they dictate what they can do. We just unfortunately follow suit to our detriment. Dr. Anderson Thompson. The direct and overall physical and psychological subordination and subjugation of one's racial group over another for the purpose of the belief, supported by religious doctrine or scientific data. That either because of heredity, genes and family, or culture, social environment, that the dominant race in power is superior to the dominated and powerless race. Once again, when you hear the word race, I put culture in there.
This call is being recorded.
I put culture in there. So we have a caller. Go ahead, caller 267. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. This is Brother Ralph.
Hey, Ralph, how's it going, my man? How you been?
All right. I was just calling in to listen in to see how that everything. Well, let me pull over. You know, I was just calling in to listen.
Oh,
but,
great.
You know, I got to give you credit. But, you know, I got to give you credit, man, at the beginning of the week because, you know, something's got to be done with our people involved with this Christianity piece. I mean, it's really killing our people.
Yes, it is.
Really, man.
Yeah.
This stuff, if you really look at it, that's the reason why we're so docile. You know, we don't believe in self-defense.
Yeah.
This is the same thing Malcolm was up against in the 60s, man.
And you're right. I do too.
But those belief systems that our people are taking part in to make them docile or make them jump around like a bunch of crazed animals, you know, calling that worship. Man, we got to really take a look at us. I mean, we have to really start pointing the finger. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying it's that man's fault. And I understand he... But when we know it's his fault, when we know what he has done, it's time for us to start looking at ourselves and start undoing, Brother Oshie. That man is not going to do it for us.
That's right. That's right.
We got to look at ourselves and find out. We got to overcome our fear. Put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We have to. You know, we're like a bunch of punks, man. I mean, I look at social media, they want you to sign this petition, sign that petition. Those petitions ain't gonna do nothing. You know, it's just a cowardly way of saying you did something. You know, so you know, I mean, really, bro.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, you know, I mean, I do love our people, but the same token, man, you know, it depresses me when I focus on some of the stuff that's going on. I mean, I was listening to a program last night out of New York. And I'm saying, like, I'm glad they're saying it because I've been saying this since Bill Clinton. But people thought I was crazy, especially in my family. When I said those black Democratic elected officials are no more than gatekeepers. And when I heard this program last night, they talked about some of these gatekeepers, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Elijah Cummings, all these people that they, you know, that our people admire and honor and think that they're doing something. These people have been in office since...
For 40 years.
Yes,
they've been in office over 40 years, man. And still, in fact, there's more of them and still more of them acting in the way of gatekeepers, because that's what they are. We have more people in elected officials today than we ever have, and yet collectively our situation is worse. So, hey.
Man, and they knew about the gentrification coming our way. You know what I mean? They knew about the gentrification coming our way. They knew about the mass incarceration because they love Bill Clinton. Oh, they worship him. They worship the ground he walks on. So they knew some of the dangers that were coming our way, yet they have mention. I'm going to give you another example, which really makes me sick to my stomach. But here in Philadelphia, they have these places they call stop and goes, which are owned by Asians. I don't know if they're Korean or whatever, but they're owned by Asians. They sell malt liquor and bad food in our neighborhood. You look at those stores, and you look at the license on their wall. Their license are expired, don't have the right address. And then I just found out, now our people have been protesting these things in the neighborhood for years because it's drug activity. They sell nothing but bad liquor, that malt liquor. I don't drink. I used to drink. I don't drink anything no more. I won't even have a wine cooler. I won't even touch wine because it's all poison to our people. They talk about how it killed off the Indians, but look what it's doing to our people. It's killing them. So they put these stores in the black community. They're all over. There's maybe 2-3 a block selling that malt liquor, selling stems for their crack use, and God knows what, and bad food. Our elected officials knew. Now, we got a majority black city council here in Philadelphia. Our elected officials knew that there was a city ordinance on the books that these stores have to close by 11 o'clock. Do they enforce it, Brother Oshie? No. So they're just getting their hands greased. They might be so stupid they don't even know about the ordinance. Only thing they know is let me go snitch the master about which slaves is getting out of hand. You know what I mean? We got to wake up and see that these people are gatekeepers. Politics has nothing for us. You know, that's why we're not even taken seriously, because we look to those fools as leaders. And so we look to those fools as leaders. What are we? What are we? So, brother, you know, that's just my rant.
Right. We're just, we're like sheep, man. We're like sheep being led to the slaughter, brother. And that's how they want us to be.
Some of us know these things.
Yeah.
Brother Oshie, some of us know these things and still want to get on the radio and talk about this politician is this and this politician. All politicians are bad for us. You know, what has voting gotten us? And, you know, I always say this, that, you know, I hear this ignorant cliche on the radio every time around election time. Our people died for the right to vote. That's making our ancestors like a bunch of fools. They were murdered trying to obtain a better life.
That's
you
right.
know what I mean?
That's
they
right.
were killed.
That's
they
right.
didn't just die to pull a lever. They were murdered to try to get a better life.
And then the other question is, what were they going to vote for? What were they voting for? You know?
Right.
See?
Right. You know, it's just sad, Brother Oshie. You know, it's sad. I'm going to take that sister's advice. I heard of what she said last night. You know, because, and I'm just going to start pulling. Last time I pulled the lever for either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, I wrote in Mickey Mouse.
Right on.
But this time I gotta be more. But this time I gotta be more realistic than that. I'm gonna vote in myself because I'm more qualified than these fools.
Right on,
that
Ralph.
We have representing them. You know.
Right on,
brother. But I just, you know, I was just dialing the number, brother, just so I could
appreciate
listen
it.
To you because you are a voice. You are a voice of reason. I'm glad that brother from Britain called you.
I mean,
that was entertaining, and it was good because I always want to know how. I believe the same things is going
yes,
on
it is.
Over there that's going on here.
Yes, it is.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
so
it
I
is.
I would love to hear what that brother got to say.
Yeah.
I love Brother Jay calling you
yeah.
because he always talks about the Sky Daddy. I hear him on other programs, but you know, yeah, our people got to pull. It's us, man. We got to do for self, and we won't do it.
Yeah.
We won't do it, brother.
I hear you. Well, I appreciate you calling, Ralph. I appreciate you calling when I was on Blog Talk, and now you're calling now. In fact, if it wasn't for you, yep. I wouldn't be on this forum, so I appreciate you, brother. I want you to know that.
Yeah, I appreciate you too, man. You're a voice of reason, and people really need to hear about you and support you in what you're doing.
Right
because
on.
You are a voice of reason. All right, man, because I'm driving. But I had to pull over just to say, keep up the good work, brother. You know,
always, brother. Peace to you, brother Ralph. Have a good weekend.
You too, brother. Peace.
Yes, Brother Ralph. And if it wasn't for Brother Ralph, I wouldn't even be on this forum. I appreciate Brother Ralph. Let me finish this. These definitions. Let me finish these definitions. The definition of race and racism. Functional definitions to help us clearly understand what it is and what it ain't. We're going to break down these definitions too. Dr. Anderson Thompson, Andy Thompson. He said, the direct and overall physical and psychological subordination, subjugation of one's cultural group over another for the purpose and belief supported by religious doctrine or scientific data. The religious doctrine, of course, is the Christian religion, Christianity. Now, if there is something in Islam that denotes differences, then somebody rescue me if I'm wrong. The issue of Islam is the fact that Islam believes itself to be part of the three Sephardic religions of Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. And the patriarch of that religion is Abraham. And so that's like I heard the other day said when Sarah could not bear Abraham a child. And Abraham had sex with Sarah's handmaiden, Hagar, who was an Egyptian. So, and their son, Ishmael. And, of course, they were cast out. Sarah said, hey, that boy and that woman, they got to go. Okay? Because God just told me, I'm going to bear a son for you, who, of course, is Isaac. So they had to go. But then the question became, is really that the Jewish dude, Abraham, supposedly is Jewish or Hebrew, whatever, has a baby by an Egyptian that becomes a Muslim or an Arab? How does that happen? Yeah, okay. And so in the religion, this story is Noah, the Noah story. I think I've gone over this a few times too, and I'll go over it again right now. Noah, after God tells Noah, hey, dude, what? It's me, God. Oh, what's up? Hey, sin is running rampant down here. It's just going crazy. And I'm tired of y'all. So I'm going to flood the world and kill all humanity. Wow, really? Yeah. But I'm going to save you, your wife, and your three sons and their three wives. Your wife, your three sons, and their three wives. I'm going to save y'all. I want you to build an ark. What's an ark? Big ass boat. Wow. Okay. Sidebar here. You seen they got that ark? They build an ark. I think it's either in Kentucky or Tennessee. It's an attraction. And in the town that they built it in, they were supposed to, thought they were going to have all kind of visitors and all kinds of businesses, all kind of business. They ain't got nothing. And the attraction is a bust. But anyway, so I want you to build the ark. And these are the measurements. At the appointed time, I'm going to make it rain hard for 40 days and 40 nights. And all life on the planet would be have drowned. So I want you to open up the ark at the time of the appointed time. And these animals will go in, male and female, male and female. Okay. And of course, you remember the story. If you don't, as the storm brewed and the boat was moving back and forth and the animals, all of that, then there was a calm. First, he sent out a raven. didn't return, so it's still bad out there. Then he sent out a dove, and a dove came back with an olive branch. So that was the calming. And so the boat now is, it comes upon what they believe was Mount Ararat. Okay, that's why they've been looking for it in that area, and they never found anything. Because of why? Because the story ain't true. Anyway, so Noah builds a vineyard. Building a vineyard, that means you got grapes. And if you got grapes, you can make wine. So he made some wine. He got drunk. Guess it was hot outside because he was naked. His son, Ham, did not cover his father's nakedness, but told his brothers. His brothers walked backward, didn't see his father looking naked, covered him up. When Noah came out of that drunken stupor, found out what Ham had done, he said, Ham, come up in here, dude. What's up with that? So now I'm going to curse you to be servants unto your brothers. So from what Dr. Anderson Thompson is saying, for the support of the belief supported by religious doctrine, they believed through their Christian religion that we were supposed to be slaves. And if you could remember, they said that we were happy in our servitude. We were happy. That's the image they painted of us. That's the image even in illustrations, even in movies. But then, of course, once the servitude was over, now we was lazy. We don't want to do nothing. They made us work from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. We built this, that, and the other, but now we lazy. Oh, now what it is now? We're criminals, we're thugs, we're drug addicts, drug dealers, no fit fathers, no fit mothers. And scientific data, you had the bell curve, Ernstein and Murray. You had this Caucasian, I can't remember his name, Rustin, I believe it was, out of Canada. He said, I have empirical data to show the inferiority of African people. Francis Cress Welsing, and you can get this one on YouTube, debating Shockley. Shockley was a Nobel Prize winner for the transistor. He was not a scientist. He was a scientist, but he was not a geneticist. He didn't, but yet he wanted to dabble in genetics. And wanted again to prove the inferiority, because just like Margaret Sanger of Planned Parenthood and all of the, those in the eugenics movement, to say that we must get rid of the bad genes that are in the human family. Only the good genes, the Caucasians, must be preserved and replicated. All the bad stuff, that's got to go. I know I'd seen another piece on Ma'afa 21 on the abortion piece. Let me say this about that, because I want to be clear. I am not pro or anti-abortion. I'm not pro or anti-abortion, because in the reality sense, there are some women that shouldn't have kids because of how some children are treated. And what's interesting is that you see all these Caucasian men, because I used to work for Planned Parenthood in the teen peer program. I didn't promote abortions, but what I wanted to promote was for teens to get the most pertinent, up-to-date information on their sexuality, the most pertinent, up-to-date information in terms of how it operates, and, of course, contraception, the things that are out there, the information that was out there, the pill, the Depo-Provera, all the stuff. And if it was bad, we got to talk about that. That's what I was about. So you can make an intelligent decision. Because there was kids out there believing that, well, if I have sex standing up, I can't get pregnant. or if he doesn't penetrate me, I can't get pregnant. But if he ejaculates on your vagina, because containing the ejaculation is sperm, and sperm has one objective and one objective only, and that is to find that egg. So even if he didn't penetrate you, if it's all over your vagina and it can get inside your vagina, it's looking inside your uterus, inside your vagina, past the cervix, into your uterus, into a fallopian tube to find that egg, it'll do it, because that is the struggle of life. So what I wanted to do to make sure that young people understood sexuality, and understood sex and the things that are about that. No, I was not supporting or promoting abortion. Once again, I was not a proponent or opponent of it. To me, if that's a woman's decision, her and whoever she's dealt with, that's their decision. But the scientific data to prove that we are an inferior people has never been there. It is bull, but there's a lot of stuff out there on that. It's a bell curve. That either because of heredity, genes, and family genes, once again, the Caucasian wanted to believe that genetically we were inferior. But now that we see, now that we know that the science, that we are not inferior. In fact, we're superior. Atlanta Black Star, if you online, you see sometimes that Atlanta Black Star, I always tell you to go to AtlantaBlackStar.com for good, outstanding narratives and video streams and so forth. And one of them is the video stream. In fact, you can go to AtlantaBlackStar.com and put in, what is it? I can't remember the title, but it basically deals with our genetics. Five things that prove that genetically that not that we're superior, but hey, our genes are the strongest because they're the folks. we're the first, you know, when an honest geneticist will tell you our genes are dominant. Caucasian genes are recessive. Our genes are dominant. That's why I was very upset, even way back then, when Jimmy the Greek Snyder, who used to be on the NFL Today, who was a bookie, that's his claim to fame. He's a bookie, but he off the cuff interview, which of course he got fired from CBS because of it. He said that we meaning Caucasians, we made them better athletes. We bred them to be better athletes. That's a damn lie. We were that because we were that genetically. On the continent, the brothers and sisters in the western part of Africa are strong sprint runners. The brothers and sisters in the eastern part of Africa are distance runners. In fact, for the first time in almost 40 years, a Caucasian woman won the New York Marathon. Because Africans, particularly from Ethiopia, Somalia, been winning those races. No, they didn't do that. The only thing they brought to us was death. Death of us physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. That's what they brought to us. That's what the Caucasian has brought to us, is death. Culture or social status, the dominant culture in power is superior to the dominated and powerless culture, Dr. Anderson Thompson. Dr. Milana Karinga, racism is not an attitude. It is a system of defamation, denial, and destruction of a people's history, culture, and right to freedom based primarily on the false concept of race. Caucasians divide a concept of race, giving themselves the top position with everyone else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. It is a system of defamation. They defame us. You see the characters that they made. You see the characters in European Jews, supposedly our friends, were one of the main perpetrators of that imagery. Buck eyes, big lips, all of that. The European Jews, Al Jolson in blackface, mammy. They defame us. We brought civilization. People came to sit at our feet. We brought it to the world. And now, today, no one wants to be in our vicinity. Even us, some of us. Defamation. Denial. They deny our achievements. When the Caucasian Richard Spencer was on Fatty, I shouldn't say that. TV One, News One Now, TV One with Roland Martin. And he was being interviewed by Roland Martin. He was emphatic, but the Egyptians were white. They were not black. The Egyptians, you know, I've never done anything like that, because they deny any achievement that we made because they wanted us to believe that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, of any consequence, of any note. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. And destruction. Dr. Leonard Jeffries said the Caucasians about the 3 D's, death, domination, and destruction. If they can't dominate you, they'll destroy you, which ultimately be your death. This was defamation, denial, and destruction. They will destroy us, and they're destroying our minds. They're preventing us to see who we are. What they have done, they just sit back. They ain't doing it. They just sit back and watch it happen. Because they made it happen. They've orchestrated this. This is their play. This is their world. They shaped and fashioned this in their image and in their interest. That's why I'm saying we must understand what real power is. That's why I have a problem with people listening, power the people. No, you must understand what power is. Power is not money. The money now is controlled by the international bankers, the International Monetary Fund, all these elitists. That money is backed up by nothing but their word. But what backs their word, of course, is the power to kill you, is the military might of this country. The United States is the bastion of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege around the world. Around the world. No, it's not backed up by anything. So you can't get no real power from that. Power is the ability to define reality. Power is not politics. Just as Brother Ralph just said, we have more people in elected positions than we've ever had, and yet our condition is just as bad or worse. No power from that. Power is information and education. No, it's not. Because if the information and education that you have been receiving is flawed and inaccurate, and it is, no power from that. Power is the ability to define reality. Caucasians define reality. They went around the world saying, this is the reality. Sticking a sword in the ground and a cross in the ground and saying, this is the reality. And if you don't bow down to it, you will be destroyed. The question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in Caucasian's reality? Who are we in the reality that we find ourselves in the hells of North America? In the European Caucasian supremacy, which is a global phenomenon. Who are we? First, we were the soulless people with no culture to speak of, justifying our enslavement. In fact, many Caucasians and even some of us, believe that our enslavement was good for us because it exposed us to Western ideas and culture and of course, the Christian religion. It was good for us. Who are we in their reality today? In their reality today, we're the no fit fathers, no fit mothers, drug addicts, drug dealers, out of control, don't want to learn. That's who we are in their reality. Man. Destruction. We're headed for destruction. Destruction of a people's history, culture, and right to freedom based primarily on the false concept of race. The false concept. The Caucasians devised that concept, giving themselves the top position. If they understood the science in terms of evolution, they would know that we have the top position. If we were the first people, we had the first civilizations. It's just natural. It's just logical. But no, they have. They are the top. When I said it to a Caucasian way back when, I didn't have the information as I have now. But even at that time, I said, you know, African people, why do you keep saying y'all the top? Well, and he said, well, you know, we're better evolved. We're more evolved. Well, really? Yeah. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, racism, Caucasian supremacy is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as Caucasian, whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perceptions, logic, symbol, formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response, has conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity. So what she says right there, racism is in everything they do. All areas of people activity. Racism is at the core of it. Discrimination, subjugation is at the core of economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. All areas of people activity. For the ultimate purpose of Caucasian genetic survival and to prevent Caucasian genetic annihilation on planet Earth, a planet upon which the vast majority of the people are classified as non-Caucasian. They are black, brown, red, and yellow. But white-skinned people and all of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive white-skinned people. Because if a person who is dominant mates with a person who is dominant, you're going to get dominant. If a person who is dominant mates with a person who is recessive, you're going to get dominant. Now, I understand there have been some things in genetics. It's not clear cut, where you would see a dark-skinned person having an intimate relationship with a light-skinned person, and that that offspring did not come out dark. It didn't show in the hell, didn't come out white. But you also see within human species albinism, albinos. Now, one of the things, one of the hypotheses about not the Nation of Islam, the Yaqub grafting, creating the Caucasian, I ain't going there. But you have seen albinism happen within populations. Unfortunately, in Africa, because of the stupidity and ignorance and superstition, some albino people are under attack and under threat because they believe that these albinos, if they take some hair, a limb, or whatever, you know, what, I don't know. But it's in all areas of people activity. It's in everything they do. Everything they do. You could add sports to that. Well, sports is entertainment. So, you know, that's what it is. Sports is entertainment. But it's in everything. It's in economics. The economic situation is just disgusting. The inequality, the economic inequality in this country is so damn bad, it's ridiculous. And the recent tax bill that the Congress passed will further that divide. They don't have the will to do anything right. There is no justice with these people. There is none. They will not do what's right. Never. Or surprise me. Economics, education. We know what has happened within education, how it has been divided, how some people get a better education than others by design. Entertainment, you know who controls that. And what is interesting, I don't know, I get up in the morning, so prior to, I watch the news most times, but sometimes I've been watching Unsung. I like Unsung. You know, and they talk about particularly some of the way back in when Caucasians were running the record industry. They still do. They still do. You know, and how that goes. Because you would think that an artist and that person is the singer, the plays the instruments and all of that would get the lion's share of what a record would cost or what an album would cost or a CD would cost or whatever. They don't. So in an entertainment aspects, they dictate, just like the football field. They were going to dictate the fact that you should not stand. How dare you kneel for my anthem, for my flag, for the troops. Let me say this right here, right now. I don't give a damn about the damn troops, even the brothers who served, because what you served for was to maintain and sustain the privilege that these crackers had. You came back home and you couldn't go to a damn restaurant. You had to go around the back. And I ain't even talking about back in the day. I'm talking about even right now. Okay, granted, you don't have to go around the back of the restaurant today, but the mentality is still there. So no, I would never be a police officer, and I'm glad. I tried to join the Navy, and I missed it. I'm glad, because I would never do something in service to this country to maintain the situation that they have and the lies that they continue to perpetuate. No, I would never do it. So no, I ain't down with Veterans Day. Y'all serve, thank you for your service. But the bottom line is that where are some people to serve for our liberation? Where are the guns? Where are the people lined up ready to battle for our liberation? The only thing that you have done from the beginning of the first revolution, when Crispus Attucks, and they hailed Crispus Attucks be the first to die in the revolution for these crackers. From that moment to this very moment, to the occupations around the world that the United States government does in service to European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. No, I'm sorry. And look what's happening in Africa. To me, if those brothers and sisters were truly, but of course they're indoctrinated, which is surprising to me because I know some good, strong-willed and minded brothers who were in the service or still are in the service. And I'm saying to myself, man, you know, they were some good, strong, conscious brothers. Labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, all of that. Dr. Amos Wilson. Caucasian supremacy, whatever form it takes, wherever it exists, must achieve three major goals if it is to socialize Africans into accepting its natural rights of final authority and primary privilege. It must establish the human racial idea as a Caucasian in contrast to an African. It must proclaim that Africans are innately destined to serve Caucasians and that the fulfillment of their true nature requires their happy commitment to this service. God. His definition is tough. It is really tough. Man. Finally, it requires that Africans be persuaded that they are incomplete without Caucasians and that their highest calling involves the sacrificing of themselves for the benefits of Caucasians. That's a tough one, ain't it? That's a tough one. That definition of racism is a tough one. Caucasian supremacy, whatever form it takes, wherever it exists, must achieve three major goals if it is to socialize us into accepting it as natural rights of final authority and primary privilege. It must establish the human racial idea as Caucasians in contrast to us. It must proclaim that us are innately destined to serve them and that the fulfillment of that true nature requires us to be happy in that commitment to serve them. Remember, I mentioned that earlier, didn't I? Finally, it requires that us be persuaded that we are incomplete without Caucasians and that their highest calling involves sacrificing of ourselves for the benefit of them. Some of us are afraid to even listen to what I'm saying There are some of us who are afraid to even comprehend, to even give it a thought to what I'm saying. Afraid to even say the word liberation, self-determination, sovereignty. They can't even mention that. I'm telling you, sad. It is sad. That's why I'm saying to us that I don't blame us. I don't blame us for this condition. I put the blame where it squarely belongs. On European, Caucasian, supremacy, racism, and privilege. Because contained in that system, that every form of human life, every people activity, as Dr. Welsing says, that is encoded in that. And that there are no accidents. Everything was designed to function.
Well, no, the criminal justice system is broken.
No, it ain't. None of this stuff is broken. Everything was designed to function in the way that it does, because everything was designed to help maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have created for themselves at the expense of humanity. No, there's a lot of people that don't want to hear this. I know that. But damn it, I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Because I don't care. In fact, you know, they could take this off the radio. In fact, I did one program. We talked about one of the conspiracies. Next thing I knew, I was off. So what happened? I didn't touch nothing. Didn't I? I was off. Well, you know, could be just a coincidence that the internet just happened to go down at that time. Hey, that could happen, you know. Because, you know, things happen, you know. Yeah. We only got a couple of minutes. So I'm hoping that we understand what racism is and what it isn't. And I hope that we understand that we have been put into a position by Caucasians to hate ourselves so bad that we kill ourselves, that we murder one another, that we kill one another. We got 1 minute left. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. Stephen Biko said the most potent weapon, as he was being beaten in that South African jail, he said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, because when the M-I-N-D is freed, then we can work on the M-I-N-E to control the resources that are under the feet of African people. And not just African people on the continent, but African people throughout the diaspora. Brothers and sisters, have a great weekend. Enjoy yourself this weekend. Have a good time. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Peace, family.